In inner healing series based on Luke chapter 4 verse 18, and I read it so often, so I just quote it from memory. It says that the Spirit of the Lord is upon me, Jesus says, quoting from Isaiah 61 in Luke 4 verse 18, to preach the acceptable year of the Lord. And among those things it says to heal the broken hearted. So we know that the Bible does talk about healing of a brokenness in our life. And the reason we went into this series is also because we realized that what we really are depends on how whole we are on the inside. You know how sometimes when people are hurt and when people got things in their life that is not fully mended yet, that because of social implications and social culturing on our life, we put on a mask. And so that we behave in strange ways sometimes. Though we are sad on the inside, we become jovial on the outside. But then something cracks in the end. Or sometimes there are things in our life that are so such a burden upon us that there's no one to share. When people ask, how are you? We say, yeah, fine. But the inside is not fine. And then we struggle and struggle. And as we have seen in this series, that the pain that sometimes we carry in our heart and in our soul needs to be touched by God for us to be real Christians. And to be able to be honest with one another, to be able to be transparent with one another, is when we can be whole on the inside. Because if some of us are wounded physically, or you have a cut, a serious one that is, what would happen? You bandage it, or sometimes you stitch it together, you wash it, and you try to cover it so that it's not exposed to air and bacteria and to dirt and for it to heal quickly. And so sometimes that happens. We understand. Sometimes people can't be true to themselves or be transparent because there's too much on the inside. Too much things festering. Too many wounds festering. And so we try to cover it, hoping that it will get healed. Unfortunately, covering it doesn't get healed. There's only one person can reach deep on the inside. Jesus of Nazareth. He's the same yesterday, today, and forever. The anointing is still on His life to heal the brokenhearted. And believe me, you could have 50 years of sorrow, but in one split second, touched by the Lord, 50 years of sorrow can melt away. Do not underestimate the power of Jesus to heal. You know, sometimes we think and we calculate wrongly in our natural mind. We think that if a person has been in a certain situation for 30 years, well, maybe they need about 4 years of psychoanalysis and counseling to get them over. We're all talking natural here. To Jesus, healing a little cold and healing someone who's paralyzed is the same. It doesn't take longer. It's the same. So to Jesus, no matter what we have been through in our life, all we need is His healing anointing to come into our hearts and lives, and one touch of His Spirit is all we need. Think about the madman of Gadara. In fact, Matthew says there's two, but let's focus on the one that Mark talks about. He was so wild. Right? When someone is mad like that and demon-possessed, mind you, every person who is demon-possessed, it's because they have been through something that opened a door to the demon. Demons don't just jump on people. If they could, right now, everyone would be possessed who doesn't know Jesus. Demons don't just jump on people. They have to have a crack and opening in the soul to creep in. And so we know that as far as Jesus is concerned, whether it be the madman or Gadara, who was so broken, and he must have so many hurts in his life to the extent that he yielded to demons, and he's so bad that there's no place to keep him. He's left running around in the wilderness, in the desert area, without clothes. And the madman of Gadara, everyone knows about him. Wild looking man, almost living like an animal, like a beast. How long did it take Jesus to heal him? One moment. And you know how I know he is healed? Because he wanted to follow Jesus after he was healed. And the disciples of Jesus saw him in his right mind. Must have been shocked. Cloth, neat. And he wanted to follow Jesus. And you know what Jesus says? You go and preach. He must have been healed. Made whole. So Jesus now sends him as a witness. How long does it take for Jesus to heal? Not very long. Just a moment of time. Today we want to look at healing in the life of David. Yes, King David. And look at some of the things he went through. How he got hurt. And how he got things in his life that God needed to touch. David started as a bright young little boy. Like all of us started nicely in life. Little babies, right? Sweet little young things. And he had a reasonably nice childhood, always taking care of the sheep somewhere out in the pasture, a bright young lad. One day he met Samuel, who anointed him, and there was an extra anointing upon his life. But he continued in his little shepherd boy's ways. And he's a happy, nice little kid. And one day when there was war on, his father sent him to bring food for his three older brothers. So David, you know, carried the food. It must have been in his sack or whatever. And he bring the food all the way near to where the battle was going on. And knowing David as he journeyed along, probably David would be whistling a song. Whistling all the way, or blowing his flute, or just humming, or singing all the way. I could visualize him as a happy little boy, right? I cannot imagine David as a kid, sad fella. Then the bear came and took the cup. Oh yeah, you know. Lion came. Oh yeah. No, he was a really upbeat kid. A lion came, he went after the lion. A bear came, he went after the bear. I mean, that was a brave little lad. So I could visualize him as that cheerful fellow, positive, you know, doesn't seem to be much hurt in his life. Of course, I'm sure he didn't have a perfect life, but he came out a pretty positive kid with, you know, so many brothers around him. And if I remember correctly, he was number 7 down the line, youngest kid. And 6 big brothers before him. And as he came to this place, and there was a story of David and Goliath, the famous story that we all know by heart. The only thing that I'd like you to remember is it was a real story. Right? Sometimes we read the Bible so long, you say, oh yeah, it's a story. It was real. The fear around was real. The atmosphere was real. There was a real risk of him losing his life. These are real incidences. And here the story of 1 Samuel chapter 17, before that he used to play the harp for Saul, because Saul was demonized and oppressed. But here's the incident in 1 Samuel chapter 17, where David slay Goliath. And then Saul says in verse 58, 1 Samuel chapter 17 verse 58, Saul says, "Whose son are you, young man?" I mean, David was now famous. He was the killer of Goliath. He's a young little boy. Not very big size. Young little boy. Slay Goliath. "Whose son are you?" David says, "I am the son of your servant Jesse, the Bethlehemite." And in chapter 18 verse 2, Saul took him that day and would not let him go home to his father's house anymore. So, you know, he became popular with everybody. Saul took him in. And then he made a very great friendship. Now, let's see the emotional development of David's life. Though we're talking about inner healing. So, at that time, Saul has a son called Jonathan. In verse 1. And Jonathan, when he saw David, he liked David a lot. And they became best friends. And in Australia, they became mates. the best, the deepest, or whatever concept of mateship Australia has. That was it, mateship. Right. So, I can imagine if David were Australian, he comes to see Jonathan. Hi, mate. Jonathan, yeah, mate. Right. And then they went along together. But they were Hebrew kids, so I don't know what they said. No, no. Shalom, oh my friend. And took him home, and in verse 3, they were so good friends that they made a covenant because he loved him as his own soul. So they have a very wonderful, they were very wonderful soulmates together, good friends. And so that was David's emotional development there. He left his parents, joined the king's service, have a very good friend, and then the women were all in love with him. This is a dangerous situation coming up. In verse 7, the women sang and they danced. And I think the composer of that song should have been shot. The women sang, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s. And Saul said, wait a minute, what were the women singing? And so his guard, could be Abner, whosoever, says, oh king, they're just singing. No, tell me, what did they sing? Give me the wording. Can somebody please give me one of their wordings? And when he saw it, say, Saul has slain his thousands, David his 10,000s, and Saul's face dropped. Now David didn't ask for it. Somebody make problems for him. The women here. Sorry ladies, not talking about you. And verse 8, Saul was angry, and the saying displeased him. And he says, they gave David 10,000, and I'm the king of Israel, they gave me 1,000. And instead of being happy, he was sad. Here's something wrong with Saul. And of course, something not fully right with the women who composed this song. I wonder who composed this song. Shoot him with an arrow or something. Crucify him. Yeah, they crucify. There was a situation here. And here, Saul should not have been jealous. You know why? If you have someone better than you, serving under you, shouldn't you be very happy? Right. I mean, you should be pleased. Look, this guy could do 10 times more things than me, and he's serving me. It's wonderful. And it's not just how smart you are, but how you get smarter people to work for you. You know how these old stories in movies, you always have these brilliant scientists or these computer geeks, and they're so brilliant. I mean, they could recite pi to the 212th place. Or they could invent things at the spur of the moment. But they're always serving under some guy who's using them. It's always like way. And Saul should not have felt insecure. There was something wrong with him. David has not done anything. But in verse 9, David now has an enemy. A king who loved him and hate him at the same time. Boy, oh boy, this is a love-hate relationship. Good for the movies. Love-hate relationship. One time he loved David because he did so much. On the other hand, he hated David because he took his glory away. And in verse 9, I like the way the Bible puts it. He eyed David. When David came in, he got, I'm not good at making angry faces, I'll do my best. And one day in verse 10, David was playing the harp, Saul was there. In his dark mood, Saul looked at David. And what was David doing? Still young fella. David was just playing his instrument. I could imagine David just trying to calm the king down. The